From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. For millions of Americans, higher education just doesn't work. Of all those who start college each fall, barely more than half graduate with a degree or certificate in 6 years, and many leave campus saddled with huge debts. Peter Smith, who has started several innovative colleges and now teaches at University of Maryland University College, says the system ignores the persistent, purposeful learning people do on their own or at work.
The consequences of us not putting this as a high priority are devastating for individuals, and I think socially, civically, and economically devastating for the country, because we're missing out on all this talent.
Smith's book is Free Range Learning in the Digital Age, the Emerging Revolution in College, Career, and Education. He's on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. The notion of what college should be and how it should work is under enormous pressure. Of the millions who start college each fall, barely more than half, less than 55%, graduate with a degree or certificate within 6 years. Many, with and without degrees, leave campus saddled with debt. At almost $1.5 trillion, student loans total more than credit card debt. And still, the U.S. has a big shortage of skilled workers in some fields, holding back the economy. Our guest today has put a lot of thought into how higher ed can serve adults who need it. In 1970, when he was just 24, Peter Smith launched the Community College of Vermont for rural adults without the time or money to attend college. Since then, he has served as Vermont's lieutenant governor and as representative in Congress. A Republican, he was defeated for re-election in 1990 by independent Bernie Sanders. Smith was also assistant director general for education at UNESCO. He started two more colleges and is now the Orkund Endowed Chair and Professor of Innovative Practices in Higher Education at University of Maryland University College. Smith's new book is Free Range Learning in the Digital Age, the Emerging Revolution in College, Career, and Education. We're here at UMUC in Adelphi to discuss it. Welcome to On the Record.
Well, it's great to be with you, Sheila. Thanks so much for this.
What do you mean by free-range learning?
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, what I don't mean. What I don't mean is that there are going to be 10 million learners running all over the place doing their own thing. What I do mean is that the resources available in the society today make possible the access to lifelong and post-secondary learning, or learning of all kinds, that was simply not possible even 15 years ago. The historic campus is organized on the basis that the society around it is information poor, and therefore you have to bring people to the campus, and you have laboratories and libraries and wonderful faculty, but they tell you what to do. They tell you what the steps are. It's a vertical ladder up to an associate or a baccalaureate or a certificate or another degree. But the whole notion is that if you don't go there, you can't get it. Today, that world has been flipped upside down. The fact of the matter is we have the technology and the knowledge assets and the resources to deliver pretty much anything, and there are some exceptions, and I would always admit that, anywhere with the right kind of support and assessment and validation, or importantly, to recognize learning that people do throughout their lives and try to validate it for academic value or employment value in ways that we could never dream of. So if the university or the college historically was an oasis in an information-poor desert, that desert has gone green. And now it doesn't mean colleges are going to go away, but it's going to mean that the whole understanding we have as a society and as individuals about how people can learn best, how to fit education into a busy working person's life, how to enrich learning in ways, how to, frankly, lower costs and increase quality. These are all things that were unimaginable 15 or 20 years ago. And that's what I was trying to capture in the book, is not only that incredible richness of resources, but putting it against this incredible waste of talent that we have accepted historically, the people who happen to miss college the first time around, and they are, in that case, the talent is their innate ability to learn, and people who go on and do interesting and compelling things in their lives, but there's no way for them to get back on the higher education train. One, because they're busy with family and children or work or whatever. Two, because they may not have the resources. But three, because we're asking them to relearn things that they already know that they've learned at work or in life.
I think you just touched on, without using the same phrase that you use so often in your book, this idea of hidden credentials. What are hidden credentials?
Well, what we know from research is that the average adult, spends more than 700 hours a year learning things purposefully. So it's personal learning. Sometimes it's done in a union hall or at work. Sometimes it's done on their own. Mom reading books about child development, whatever it is. But it's personal, it's purposeful, it has a beginning and an end. And that learning is characterized across the board by not being associated with college. So when I coined the term hidden credentials, it was to go with the other term, knowledge discrimination, and that we value your knowledge and your ability based on where you gained them, where you learned it, not how well you know it and what you can do with it. And that is the advantage that colleges have had. And the hidden credential, on the other hand, is saying you really are qualified to do something. And I interviewed two or three people in the book who, when their supervisor left work and went someplace else, they would do their supervisor's job and do it very well. But when it came time to refill that job, they weren't qualified or considered because they didn't have the appropriate degree or credential, even though they could do the job. So hidden credential is a way of helping people understand that they really do have important knowledge and their talent is evident. And the problem today is we have lagged in how to understand that talent, how to give it meaning, and how to apply it to important academic or employment standards.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Peter Smith, Professor of Innovative Practices in Higher Education at University of Maryland University College, UMUC, about how he sees higher education becoming more accommodating to adults. His new book is Free Range Learning in the Digital Age. I want to pick up on this idea of discrimination, knowledge discrimination. Discrimination is a loaded word. Do you mean an intentional effort to exclude have-nots?
Not per se, but de facto, the effect of our policies and the way our culture has organized itself around higher education, yes. Because if, in fact, you miss the boat when you're 18 or 19, the society's conclusion is that for some reason you were deficient. What I have discovered over 50 years and powerfully reminded of in doing the interviews I did for this book, that there's enormous talent and ability, intelligence walking around this country, and we have failed to recognize it or validate it or understand it. And so the country pays a social and a civic and an economic price, and the individual pays a social and a civic and an education or economic price. And so it isn't a matter of meanness. I'm not suggesting there are bad people out there plotting, but when you have a society that says, live and learn, the school of hard knocks, the Horatio Alger story, the mythology of our country, and the idea that there's a table of opportunity in America, anybody can come to that table if they just work hard and stick to it. And what we find is that in real time, without any rules about it, there has been a huge set of obstacles placed between the people who missed the boat the first time around, for whatever reason, and ever being able to get the recognition of learning and knowledge that they need to get to that table of opportunity.
How do you credibly assess experiential learning?
Well, the same way that we should, in my mind, be assessing learning that goes on in real time in college. Assessment done well is helping a person reflect on what it is they've learned, how they've changed, and how well they've learned it. And so it moves you away from writing an essay or taking an exam and you get an A for being able to have the facts straight, to a much deeper understanding of why what you studied was important, and being on a path that is a conscious path where you're always thinking with your faculty and advisors about why you're doing what you're doing, and then you structure the assessment to really get not just at the facts, but the importance of what you've learned to you and what you're going to do with it.
But who is the we, you mean, when you say we're doing this assessment? Who does it?
It's a faculty member. If you're coming in with prior learning and hidden credentials, there's a whole process that you go through to recall what you've learned, get the information to prove that you had those experiences, get letters from employers, get the evidence and the validation of evidence so that it can be evaluated in terms of its academic or its economic worth. So it's like advanced placement. This is another way of doing the same thing, but doing it with life experience. And it's very powerful because a woman I met at our graduation at Community College of Vermont 40 years ago, our first graduation, 8 students on the State House steps in Montpelier, Vermont. This woman came up to me. She was running a child care center. And she said, thank you for the degree and thank you for the college, but thank you for the assessment of prior learning especially, because now I know I'm a learner and I'll never stop learning. And I thought, oh my God, I thought I was doing some kind of academic auditing, you know, to be fair. And she's telling me that it was the most powerful educational experience of her life. Wow.
On that note, we need to take a quick break. We're speaking with UMUC professor Dr. Peter Smith about changes he sees coming to higher education, which he describes in his new book, Free Range Learning in the Digital Age. After the break, we'll focus on some of the people he interviewed. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm in Adelphi at University of Maryland University College to meet Dr. Peter Smith, Professor of Innovative Practices in Higher Education at UMUC. For his new book, Free Range Learning in the Digital Age, Smith talked to 6 adults he describes as trapped in their lives, unable to build the lives they want because they haven't been able to navigate college. You said you found what they told you powerful and painful. Explain that.
I've thought about it historically in terms of things college should do because it's good educationally. But what I ran into this time was people who hit a turning point in their lives. Something happens, child dies, lose a job, get divorced, whatever it may be. This time around, what I found was the consequences of us not putting this as a high priority are devastating for individuals, and I think socially, civically, and economically devastating for the country, because we're missing out on all this talent and capacity that is out there, but we're ignoring it.
Tell me one of the stories that sticks with you.
There are two really that come immediately to mind, but the first is this woman in Vermont, and she's So I said, why didn't you go to college? And she said, I was the first in my family. My family's from another country, and I was a first generation American. I didn't think it was for me. No one else had gone to college. So I graduated from high school, got married, had a baby, got divorced, and now I've been coping. I'm spending years coping because I've just got to get things going. And she's riding around with her son, who I'll call Billy, one Sunday afternoon, and I said, what do you want to do when you grow up? And he said, I want to be, and I don't think it was a marine biologist, but it was something very esoteric, real deal. I want to be a marine biologist, but I guess I can't because you and Dad didn't go to college. And you got to go to college to do that, so I guess I'm going to have to do something else. And she said, that was it. And she went back and enrolled in the community college, and she's since gotten a baccalaureate degree as well. And I said, so what's up with Billy now? And she sort of laughed, said, he's a senior in high school, and he's going to the university next year, but he's not going to be a marine biologist. And I said, oh, no, what happened? And she said, well, he decided to be a civil engineer instead. But to me, what's wrapped up in that story is a person who's on a course in life, coping, as she put it, coping. Then there's this turning point that comes where she has to either act or not act. And she chose to act, which led to a tremendous transition. And the idea that if you can't grasp those turning points when they come, as painful as they may be, or embarrassing, or whatever, these turning points, if you don't handle them, you can become what I call prisoners of your own experience. You're trapped by it. If you do grab them, you head to new territory. It may be unsettling, it may be scary, but you're taking charge of your own life. And in the process, in this case, you're getting a post-secondary education.
You said there's a second story that sticks with you.
Well, this woman grew up in downtown Hartford, Connecticut, African-American, and her parents did not go to school, but they took her to the Reading is Fundamental truck that would come through, their neighborhood or to the school, and she remembered going into the truck and just thinking she was in heaven as a 9-year-old. And she came back out, graduated from high school, and she said, I've been watching Private Benjamin, and all my friends were getting pregnant and getting married, so I joined the Army because I wanted to get out of there. And so she was in the Army for a number of years. And then she got out, and as she readily admitted, she sort of blew through her VA benefits because there was no one to advise her on education, what to do, and so she made some poor choices, and then she had to go to work. Well, now she's got kids. She got married, got divorced, has kids. And she's now in her late 40s, early 50s, at the point of the story. And both of her daughters are in college. She's at work, and she wants to have another job. And she overhears two people, and she's got a good job, okay, because she's smart, saying, well, so-and-so will never get that job because she doesn't have a baccalaureate degree. And she overheard this. And she just said to herself, I'm my own worst enemy. I've been making all these excuses all these years. I happen to think there's a little more to it than that, but often personal denial is part of what we've encouraged people to say. Is that, oh, it's my fault somehow. Well, taking personal responsibility is a critical part of this, but it is not the only part. There's got to be an adult-friendly college there to take you as you are.
You profile several companies that are part of the change. One of them is Straighter Line, headquartered in Baltimore. Tell us about Straighter Line. What does it do?
Well, Straighter Line is this really fascinating company because what Burke Smith, no relation, I hasten to add, did now 10 years ago, a long time ago, is he identified the 60 most popular undergraduate lower division general studies courses. So the courses that everyone's supposed to take. And then he went and got experts at one of the major publishing companies in America, and they created the curriculum. He then took the curriculum, all these 60 courses, if he did them all at once, to the American Council on Education, which will, for a certain amount of money, bring in a team of professors to look at any course anybody brings in and determine whether or not it's at college level. And they looked at his courses and they said, these courses are college level. So he then went out and created a subscription model where you could pay X amount of dollars a month, a little bit more for any course you took, and you could eat all you wanted to, and it was evaluated by real people. And then he made arrangements with, now I think it's over 100 colleges, maybe 150, who will accept the straighter line transcript on transfer. So what he did was create, it's all online, I think. They may now have some other kinds of supports, but it's just very interesting because you couldn't have done this 15 years ago. Couldn't have imagined it. He imagined it. He did it. And so now you can get half of your community college done maybe for less than $700.
That's Dr. Peter Smith, a professor at the University of Maryland University College. Here on The Record on WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about his ideas for changing higher education laid out in his new book, Free Range Learning in the Digital Age. So do you see college being replaced?
I think in some cases it will be. You read about in the book Degreed, one of the entrepreneurial ventures, where I think colleges have a role to play if they will, but these folks have figured out how to work with employers and work with individual people and help them get on a learning track, throwing them material electronically all the time with advising and support and helping them qualify for jobs. And they have created something where if there was not a college involved, where the law and certification and those things allow it, and there are many cases where they do allow it, that they can get someone on a pathway to a good job without college. I think what you're going to see is more and more colleges becoming what I call adult friendly, which is understanding if you have kids and a job and all the other requirements of adult life, I've got to come to you technologically, in terms of maybe weekend courses or low residency or whatever it may be. And I need to pay attention to what you already know. I need to have an advanced placement program for working adults. And there are those who say, we're going to lose half our colleges in the next 20 years. I honestly don't see that, because local institutions are the institutions that people trust, even if they may have a concern about them. And I think you're going to see lots of state and private, you know, public and nonprofit and for-profit institutions adapting to this new age, if you will, where they simply understand that being responsive to learners' needs, being highly personalized in your treatment of learners, making sure every learner knows why they're doing what they're doing and why it's going to pay off if they do it well, and that it's delivered in ways and times and modalities that are friendly to the reality of an adult's life.
What impact is this going to have on the cost of higher education, which is so burdensome?
I think it's actually going to reduce the cost, which drives some people crazy and think it's oxymoronic to begin with. But the fact of the matter, personalized education does not, to me, mean that you have 1,000 different pathways for 1,000 different students. What it does mean is that every student knows why they are on the path they're on and they have helped choose it.
So where is this going to be in 5 years?
So for the time being, in 5 to 7 years, I think you're going to see a lot of invention and new models. Like I talk about a networked university where the user experience might, the learner's experience might be, feel quite similar. I'm going to a place technologically or any other way, and I'm proceeding through things and to a degree, right? But in fact, behind the scenes, you have a whole bunch of horizontal relationships with other nonprofits and employers and data platforms and artificial intelligence applications, so that the user experience is cheaper and better and more responsive to the needs of the learner. I can tell you for sure, standing still as an institution, standing still in this environment is not a good thing. You're going to see all sorts of adaptations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Peter Smith has had a long career in higher education policy. He's currently the Orkund Endowed Chair and Professor of Innovative Practices in Higher Education at University of Maryland University College. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we have a link to information about Smith's new book, Free Range Learning in the Digital Age, The Emerging Revolution in College, Career, and Education. I'm Sheila Cass, glad you've been with us this morning on The Record. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.